This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. For the past several years, Windsor photographer Chris Kamek and her brother Nate have been working on a project called Why We Stay. The siblings have collected portraits and audio interviews with decidedly rooted Vermonters. This is Kyle Reichert, who they interviewed for the project, explaining why he thinks people leave the state.
Fortunate enough, I'm pretty happy with my job, but I mean, a lot of people struggle to find employment here. So, and a lot of people that I graduated with move because they can't find opportunities here. And there's no real industry in Vermont. I'm not sure if I really want big industry in Vermont. You know, you find that in New Hampshire, but I think that's one of the more challenging things. And property taxes aren't cheap here, so how do you survive?
In a separate and much larger project called the Vermont Roots Migration Survey, a group of researchers asked why people who grew up here stay or go, and why others leave and then return to the state. The survey was conducted last March and April, and the project's leaders expected about 75 responses. They got more than 3,500. A year later, they've been collecting and tallying the research, and two of them are back to discuss what they found now. Cheryl Morse is a professor of geography at UVM. Jill Mudgett is the historian for the Vermont's Root Migration Project. Welcome back to you both. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, if you were expecting 75, why, Cheryl, you wound up getting 3,700 responses, do you think?
I think it's because everybody has not just one story about migration, but they also have their cousins, their sisters, generations before them may have concerns about their children. So there are so many stories about leaving, staying, and coming home. And as well, rural out-migration is an issue that is important to the state, it's important to the nation, and it's actually also a global process. So at many different scales, this is something that holds great meaning for people.
Jill Mudgett, can you just explain, though, why you only thought 75 would be enough in the first place to do the kind of work that you wanted to do? What is it exactly that you were hoping to look at with a small sample size?
Well, we never intended the survey to be statistically accurate in that way. We knew it was sort of self-selecting, but it went viral on social media largely, and so we'd gathered a lot of responses from a large cross-section of Vermonters. And I think we were just looking. We started out as four participants in an academic conference, and our panel was titled Should I Stay or Should I Go?, sort of a play on that old song. And we were talking afterwards, and we're all from different disciplines, but we all have terminal degrees, and we're all academics who are born and raised here who struggled in some cases to stay here for particular reasons, staying being the end goal in sight. And we were talking about this and about the fact that, you know, if you did a survey of the faculty at any of the Burlington colleges, most of those faculty are not from here. So we found ourselves to be in this unique sort of group of people, and we started to wonder about the larger implications of that beyond sort of academics among us. And so Sherry had this idea to put together the survey, which we did, and which UVM was very generous to host for us.
And you thought 75 responses, you weren't looking here for something like census data. That's already out there. So
right.
You were just trying to get a sense of what people might say in response to these types of questions.
Right, right. And I guess I wasn't especially surprised that we had so many responses. I think, as Sherry said, Vermonters like to talk about Vermont. And I think that Vermont is uniquely situated to participate in what is, in fact, a national conversation about migration patterns, particularly from rural areas, because our history has always been wrapped up in this worry about migration. So Vermont becomes a state in the 1790s, and as early as the 1820s, Vermonters start to leave. They start to leave for what's then called the New West, which often means upstate New York. And parents are really stressed out about this, and parents don't want the kids to leave. And so what you see happening is this loose coalition of Vermont parents and public figures sort of coming together to talk about what does Vermont have to offer and how can we keep people rooted here. And it didn't always work, as we know. By the 1860s, roughly 40% of native-born Vermonters lived elsewhere. And that statistic holds for the rest of the 19th century. You can ballpark, say, about half of the Vermonters born in the second half of the 19th century end up living somewhere else. But Vermont sort of has that migration identity. And in my field of history, it's the largest topic of historical inquiry in Vermont history, and it always has been. What we call Vermont historiography is always about migration. Even when someone's writing a book about why people didn't really go and why they stayed, they're still, in fact, talking about migration decisions. So I think that, coupled with the fact that in the late 20th and 21st centuries, Vermont has a really particular identity. You could kind of poll anybody on the street in the United States, what is Vermont like? And you'd get some of the same responses about liberal politics and environmentalism and all of these things. So Vermont has, it's branded, you could say. And it's branded in a way that I think Vermont-born people generally embrace and endorse. So you take the history of migration within the state and couple that with the fact that we have a really strong state identity, and I think that positions us to be a strong voice in this discussion about why people stay, why people go, and then why does it matter, right? Does it even matter? If people are willing to come up from Massachusetts and Connecticut, for example, does it even matter that our local-born kids want to leave?
All right, we're talking about all of that today. We're talking about why people stay in Vermont after growing up here, perhaps never leave at all, why people maybe leave and then come back or have a desire to come back, and why people leave and leave for good. What are the motivations of people doing that? We're talking with two of the researchers who've been looking at this for a year, looking at more stories than they thought they would be about this kind of subject. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or if you want to share your thoughts, your motivations, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We've been getting notes from people all day since we posted this about what their stories are. Shannon in Burlington says, my husband and I moved from New York. We found good jobs, bought a house, and started a family before the age of 30. We love it here. Jennifer says, I left Vermont to try living in other parts of the country and the world, but I was always compelled to come home. Shortly after I was married, I decided it was time to get back to my roots and come home, and I've been back for 15 years. I wouldn't raise my kids anywhere else. Catherine says, I left Vermont because there weren't enough nursing jobs nearby. And Josh says, I grew up in Montpelier, graduated from UVM, and then moved to North Carolina for graduate school. When I was done there, I counted, and there were less than 20 positions in Vermont for my field, all of them filled. Since then, I've lived in three states, ending up in Oregon. In many ways, I still think of myself as a Vermonter. Depending on the context, I sometimes introduce myself that way. What maintains my ties are Facebook, online newspapers, and, of course, the Vermont Edition podcast. Very glad to hear about that. Realistically, Josh says, it is hard to see returning now that I have a family and we have settled, but oh, I wish I could. So let's break this down a little bit to make it a little bit easier to digest and talk about the leavers, the returners, and the stayers. So let's talk first about the leavers. Cheryl Morse, what did you find people told you about why they left the state?
If you just take a quick glance across our very long spreadsheet of responses, you'll see that the responses are quite diverse. And so it kind of is very helpful to start with a statistical analysis to just get a handle on it. So we expected, honestly, we expected that my job is located elsewhere or I can't find a job in my field in Vermont to be one of the leading causes for leaving. We also expected there to be a lot of discussion about cost of living. And in fact, those two things are present in our responses, but they're nowhere near. They don't even reach 40% of responses. So what we found instead is that for leavers, it's a very complex decision that incorporates several different factors. And they range from the very, very personal, like I love the ocean. If you love the ocean, we can't deliver, right? So there's not much we can do about that. But then it ranges all the way to, I don't like Vermont's politics anymore. And certainly there are people who say, I'm in aviation, a specialized industry, and I can't do it in Vermont. And so they go elsewhere. So there are a multitude of reasons, and they're like a very fine-grained sort of matrix for each person that we encountered.
Did that surprise you? Because you do often hear people leave the state because they can't find jobs and because taxes are too high or the cost of living is too high. They can't find a place to rent.
Those are the two reasons that we typically hear in the media and from our policymakers. And in fact, one of the spinoff projects from this study has been a discourse analysis of the narratives about out-migration that are present in the media and amongst our policymakers. And we found that the two dominant narratives are, in fact, that the price of living is too high in Vermont. There's a crisis of affordability is what Governor Douglas called it. And also that there's a lack of sort of high-paying professional jobs in the state. So that's the narrative that we hear a lot. But when we press on it and we ask real Vermonters what their real experience is, we find it's much more complex than that.
Jill Mudgett, you want to jump in there?
I think the joke is sort of the official voice of policymakers in Vermont is wrapped around sort of what you could call STEM issues, right? And economics and taxes and jobs and all of that. And what we're finding is that that's true, but also there are more sort of humanities reasons for wanting to stay, which get at questions that maybe don't always seem rational, decision-making that always doesn't tie to a person's economic status. You know, what do you do if you just don't want to leave? Or if you left for those economic reasons and you regret it, kind of, and you can't get back, which is, as a historian, something that I've seen in the early 19th century, for example. You know, one brother will go to Ohio and he'll write to the other brother, oh, it's easy. You just throw down wheat and it grows and everything's flat. Get off that hill farm and come out here and you can make a bundle. But the Vermont brother doesn't want to go, but he can't justify that on economic grounds. His Ohio brother knows he's not making any money in Vermont, but he doesn't want to leave. So they had to come up with explanations for staying that were distinct from economic reasons.
For the people who were leaving historically, has it been for economic reasons?
Yeah, often. And sometimes a young man's place within the family and whether or not there was any family land that was going to come down to him. And then also Sherry and I have kind of wondered contemporarily also about, you know, how we're wired. You know, what is it about one person that makes him what we might call ambitious, right? And somebody who is more rooted to place in a way that's often cast as non-ambitious.
Given the dominant narrative that people are leaving because of jobs and because of the high cost of living, and given that what you found was more nuanced than that, does that throw any doubt on the historical narrative about why people were leaving, given that there weren't surveys for, you know, everybody who was leaving those sheep farms in the 1800s to figure out exactly what they were going for? You know, maybe it was like, I got to get away from my family. I need to be my own person,
right.
You know, but
yeah.
How would we know? And what we read in the books is it was because of westward expansion and because there were more opportunities elsewhere.
Right. I think that's a great point. And it's very likely that people left to get away from family, or to tell you the truth, a lot of people couldn't stand the winter.
Yeah, well, that's right. Standard across the generations.
And that is in the contemporary survey as well. It actually, in fact, the response for, let me just check my data here, but the response for the cost of living is too high in Vermont is the same as Vermont's cold weather is intolerable, and they both got around 18% of the responses. So they're of equal importance.
Yeah, and none of this is to say that high cost of living and lack of jobs is unimportant. That's
correct.
Certainly something you did find in the survey for why people left as well.
Yeah.
We're talking today about the Vermont Roots Migration Survey. We're hearing about responses from Vermonters about why they've decided to stay in the state or leave the state or come back. What factors motivated a return to Vermont? And if you are among them, did you feel like you just had to come back, or did something fall into your lap and you thought, well, all right, I guess Vermont's the right place again? You can call 1-800-639-2211 with your thoughts. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Suzanne says, when I graduated from Vermont Law School in 88, it was extremely difficult to find a job in state. It was far easier to find work in D.C., where I spent my last semester clerking. Over the years, every time I came home to visit and saw Senator Bill Doyle, who had been my professor at Johnson State, he always asked if I was working my plan to get back home. Finally, when my partner's work allowed her to relocate and work remotely, we took the opportunity to move to Vermont. That was a decade ago now, and I am here for good. Kirsty says, I'm a 12th generation Vermonter. I left in my 20s looking for more opportunities, traveled across the country, living down south and in Chicago. I returned to Vermont because I missed the rolling green hills, clean water, and the neighborly attitude that can only be found here in Vermont. No other place I have lived or traveled cares about its people, its ideals, and its environment quite like Vermont does. All right, so let's start with what Kirsty was saying. And Cheryl Morse, is that typical of what you found of people who left? left the state and then returned?
It's not only typical of the returnees, that's what we're calling them in our survey, but it's actually a theme that's extremely strong amongst the stayers and the people who left. So it was a bit of a surprise to us, but when we look at what the reasons that stayers give us for staying, the response that got the most yeses was, I enjoy Vermont's landscape. So the landscape actually beat out family for the stayers. I'm staying here to be with my family was 62%, but I enjoy Vermont's landscape is 70%. We see that amongst returnees, that family, landscape, and Vermont's small size and community are the three things that bring returnees back. And then the way it emerges amongst the leavers is that we ask the question, do you ever feel homesick? And 85% of the leavers said yes. And then we asked them to please tell us, what are you homesick for? And so we got over 2,000 written responses to what they're homesick for. But when we look at them, we kind of scan them really quickly. Family and like the rolling green hills and the lake and the seasons, those things emerge very boldly in the responses.
All right. But I want to call out one response to that in particular and just say, I don't buy it. People have written to you and said they miss shoveling snow.
Yes.
Now, that sounds to me like somebody who is romanticizing what it was like when they had to shovel snow. I mean, sure, we all do it, but I love the snow, but I would be totally happy if the snow fell and just somehow magically did not fall on my driveway. I might think I miss shoveling snow, but Jill Mudgett, come on.
I know.
Really? Shoveling snow?
Well, that's how nostalgia operates, right? So Sherry nicely characterized these responses as embodied examples of things that they long for and miss. Shoveling snow, stacking wood.
Haying.
All of these jobs. But if you think about it, a lot of people leave for metropolitan areas. And if you're living in a city, and maybe in a city that doesn't receive any snow, and you don't get the chance to stack wood or to shovel snow, you could miss that. But it's tied in with nostalgia. You know, you go home and visit mom and dad for a week at Christmas and shovel the snow, you'll get sick of it.
But people say they miss it. And does that then call into question some of what's happening here? Because, I mean, not that people don't miss that, because I do understand that nostalgia, but that people have a romanticized idea about the place they grew up, wherever they grew up.
Right. Yeah. Personally, I'm really interested in, I'm a historian, but I'm interested in this field of environmental psychology. And people who look at children say that the environment of the 7 to 9-year-old child really forms what's normal for that child. So if you grow up in Vermont in the lush green kind of wet landscape, even if you live in Arizona as an adult, even if you love that landscape, it's not your center point of reference. It's always other. And where you're from sort of forms your core of what's a normal sort of natural environment. So that's part of what I suspect is going on here. We need to do some deeper level analysis of this survey or further surveys. So I think a lot of these Vermont high school students also grew up here. So that's part of it. But also, so I can use myself as an example. I was firmly rooted to my childhood landscape when I was a kid. And as many children, I saw the narrow and the particular rather than the vista or the view shed. And I can remember the point at my life when I was driving down the road with my mother and saw the distant view and said, oh, that's pretty. And I can remember she said, you didn't know that Vermont was pretty. And I hadn't noticed. I had been sort of looking at the rocks in the woods and I hadn't stepped back to look at the view. But also, I grew up during the 70s and 80s in Vermont when Vermont life images of Vermont were very dominant. And I internalized that. And so I not only had my own personalized childhood experience, but I was taught that Vermont was a beautiful place. And importantly, that Vermont was a place that other people coveted. Mm. And I think if you know that you're from a place that other people admire, that strengthens that sense of place. And we actually have some of those responses in the survey. People say, I like being able to say that I'm from Vermont.
For people who did return, who left and then found a way to come back or desired to come back and have done it, Cheryl Morse, are they typically, from what you've been reading, trying to find a way and waiting till a job appears or an opportunity appears? Or is it more happenstance, like, oh, yeah, I just happened to come back? I mean, is it a real desire to come back for those returnees?
Amongst, I would say the majority, yes. It was a concerted effort they made to return somehow. But there, you know, it's, I think we'd be remiss if we categorized all of the returnees as like happy now that they're back in Vermont. There are some people who are really dissatisfied, came back for unfortunate reasons or came back and then were disappointed by what they experienced. So those folks have a voice in the survey as well.
Melissa in St. Albans says, as a 24-year-old native Vermonter, having attended high school and completed my undergraduate studies in Vermont, I've always thought about leaving the state, but Vermont is and will always be my home. I was born here, and I want to raise my children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren here and die here. When I leave Vermont, likely to further my education, my goal is to bring back new knowledge and experience to improve our community and never to be away for too long. However, I will not deny that it continues to be a struggle living in this state as a young and upcoming adult, and I've made significant sacrifices to remain a Vermonter. I'm grateful for and I applaud the initiatives that exist to help young adult native Vermonters like VSAC and the Vermont State College System, to name a few. And in the future, I hope to see greater support extended to the communities outside the Champlain Valley region. And let's go to Patty, who's calling in from Worcester. Hi, Patty. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, 2 years ago, I moved to Southwest Virginia, and I thought I would never leave Vermont. And we're back. We moved back a week ago. And, you know, every day that I've been back, anywhere I go, everywhere I went, I've known somebody. I know somebody wherever I go.
Patty, your line's breaking up, but I hear what you're saying. Everywhere you go, you've just been back a week, and everywhere you go, you know somebody. And it sounds from the tone of your voice like that's an awfully pleasant experience. Well, welcome back. We'd love to hear from others of you if you have an experience to share or if you'd like to ask a question of the researchers with the Vermont Roots Migration Survey. Our number is 1-800-639-2211 or share your story on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Coming up, we'll get into how this data and research might be used to retain talented young people and to understand our shifting demographics. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking with two of the researchers responsible for the Vermont Roots Migration Survey. The survey looked at nearly 4,000 respondents who were asked to talk about why they left Vermont or stayed in Vermont, or left and came back to Vermont. It's designed to explore some of the motivations for in and out migration, and as we'll talk about in a minute, it could be used to find ways to retain talented young people who we are currently losing to other areas. Cheryl Morse and Jill Mudgett are here in the studio with me, and you can add your 2 cents by calling 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or by posting on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Diane emailed in to say, I'm a seventh generation Vermonter who grew up on a gorgeous dairy farm in the Northeast Kingdom. I was very lucky to graduate from UVM. In the 70s, there were jobs and upward mobility in the big city, Burlington. I have my own business now. All of my friends from out of state wish they were here in beautiful Vermont. And let's go to Reg in Bennington. Hey, Reg, go ahead.
I think that there's so many points to touch on. Your previous caller who talked about the small size of the state is right on. My sister has a plaque on her wall showing a bunch of trees, and it says, I love Vermont because the trees are close together and the people are far apart. But it gives a sense of the neighborliness that can be here. I am somebody who was born here, but at age six, technically moved away to go to the Philadelphia area, but the family never lost connections. We always came home for the Christmas holidays and summer vacations, and the family ties were very strong, and more I could come back, the more I would. And later in life, when we were living in Pennsylvania, my wife would get mad when I'd say, well, let's go home. And she'd say, home? We own the house right here. Home is Pennsylvania. And I'd say, no, but home is where the heart is, and that's Vermont. But a main thing for me that you haven't mentioned yet is the four seasons, or I should say the five seasons, including mud season, which I don't love. But the fact that the seasons, to me, measure our lives. And I remember years ago visiting in Hawaii and meeting some people from Vermont who said, this is absolute paradise and we're leaving. We've been here 2 years and we miss the seasons too much. We don't want it to be the same all year round. And I think that seasonal change as we go through, now I'm retired and I'm a snowbird and I go to Florida to avoid the winter temperatures, but I still would never give up my home here in Vermont, and I think that seasonality is a big factor.
Reg, thanks for the call. Appreciate hearing that. Although, you know, I have to say, as somebody who lived for a while in Los Angeles and really, really missed Vermont seasons, you can find seasonality in other places. But as Jill Mudgett was saying, if your idea of seasons is this, you know, stark difference in temperature, it can be really hard to find them. You know, you can in L.A. go to the farmers markets and find what's fresh, and that changes with the seasons. And it's a more subtle change. But I hear what you're saying, Reg, certainly. We got a note from Farrell in Grand Island, who says, I was homesick during the 15 years I lived away from Vermont. As my children entered elementary school, I could no longer suppress my desire to move home. The financial sacrifice which accompanied our return last fall pales in comparison to the wealth of social connectivity and quality of life Vermont offers. I'm grateful to be here re-entering this community, watching our two boys become Vermonters. And let's go to Christy in Castleton. Hi, Christy. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I grew up in Vermont. My father is from Vermont. He owns his own business, and he's never left the state. And I, growing up, always wanted to live in New York, and I have. I've lived in New York for the last New York City for the last 9 years. And I remember the day that I left, my dad telling me, "Everyone in New York wants to be in Vermont." And I was like, "I don't think that's true." And now, 9 years later, I own my own business, and I've been able to take some time off. And so I took 6 months off, and I'm 31. I came back. I'm living at my parents' house, and I think Vermont is about the greatest place in the entire world. And I'm very excited about spending the summer here, and my dog loves it. And we have a lake house, and Vermont is, like, it's paradise. My mom calls it God's country.
So, Christy, but you're just here for a little bit of time. Are you trying to make a move?
I'm here temporarily for the 6 months, but my goal in life is to be back here full time.
Well, thank you for calling in, Christy. Appreciate your call. And let's go to Arthur, who's on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Arthur. You're on.
Thank you. I just wondered how many men were surveyed in the studies you did.
Arthur, thanks for the call. Cheryl Morse, that's a good question, because you did find some discrepancies in the people who responded in terms of gender balance.
Yes. Two-thirds of the respondents are women, so one-third are men. So that puts it around a little over 1,000 of the people were men.
How do you think that might change things?
I think if you look at overall statistics, just looking at the general population of the survey, we will see some skewing towards if there is such a thing, and I'm not sure there's such a thing as a women's perspective on this, then it would be skewed that way a little bit. But one of our next steps in the project is to take a picture of the sort of demographic structure of today's population and create a subset of data that matches that, so that we won't have the skewing of sort of overly educated people or women within our response, and then run an analysis that way, and that would even that out.
Well, just talk a little bit more about the limitations of this, because it was a self-selecting survey. So these 3,700 people who responded, they basically found you. You know, they found a way to respond and chose to respond. So it, and you had not set it up to be something that was supposed to be, you know, every person or every perspective. But it does give you perhaps, you know, a limited sample of what people's motivations are, right?
Yes. Some of the limitations of the survey include the fact that this is a highly educated population who's responded to the survey. Vermont already has a highly educated population compared to the national average, and this is even greater. So we're skewed in that direction. Obviously, there are more women respondents than men. However, some of the things worked out really well, one of which is the age. We were trying to target people sort of who've had enough life experience to have thought through their decisions and had an opportunity to reflect on them. So the average age of the survey respondents is 41. The range is great, from 16 to 91. But the majority of respondents fit in that sort of 30 to 39 age category. So that's one of the, you know, in that way, we're sort of, we were really pleased with the results.
Let's go to Elfie, who's calling in from Thetford. Hi, Elfie. Go ahead. Elfie, you there? If you turn down your radio, I think you'll get us. Yeah.
I have to repeat the question. Hi.
Go ahead, Elfie.
I'm wondering about, you've quoted some statistics about how many people leave the state, and I just wondered how that compares to other states, if you were to look at other states for the same information about the people who are born there and what percentage of them leave.
Elfie, thanks for the call. Cheryl Morse, do you have that sense in the census data about what other states in and out migration look like?
No, but I've just received my homework for the day, which is to do that. I think one thing we do know is that many rural areas in the United States are experiencing the same out-migration, not just of youth, but across the population. So that's especially true in the center of the country. But to compare this with a specific state and what their youth out-migration rates are, we haven't done that yet. And one of the things I do want to point out is that when in our survey, when we were looking at, when we're talking about youth out-migration and when policymakers are talking about it, and we look at the census data, the one age category that has, where we've lost the most population in the last 15 years is really the people between the ages of 35 and 44. So youth is sort of got this nice fluid definition in when we're talking about youth out-migration. It's really sort of early middle-aged people where we've seen the most out-migration.
Which also correlates often with people at the highest earning potential. So perhaps the highest earning potential people are leaving the state, which could affect the state's coffers as well.
Yes, that could be.
We got a note from Tom in South Burlington who says, the panel seems to be lessening or minimizing the truth that too many Vermonters leave the state because of the limited career paths here. Anti-growth policies in the state have discouraged large and emerging employers from setting roots in Vermont, growing career opportunities here in this increasingly knowledge-based economy. Jill Mudgett, how do you respond to that? Because, you know, here's Tom saying, this is what I see as the big problem, and it feels like you're minimizing it.
Right. And that is the big problem that you usually hear in the Vermont press. And we can only go by what we see in the survey results. And maybe it's a flaw of the self-selecting nature of the survey. And maybe if we did a different survey, we might find that those STEM issues are really driving people's concerns and people really are leaving because of taxes and jobs. But we don't see that necessarily as the dominant reason in this survey anyway. And it raises interesting questions about, like, you know, people often say, well, it's just common sense. It's lack of jobs and it's high taxes. That's just common sense. But, you know, philosophers have picked apart that definition of common sense to suggest that there's nothing inherent and universal at all about common sense, that it's culturally constructed. And it could be that we just need a broader definition of why.
We've given sort of short shrift so far to the stayers, the people who never leave the state. What did they tell you about why? Cheryl?
Because they're Vermonters.
Said like a true Vermonter here.
Yeah. No, there were a lot of statements that were just very matter of fact. Why would I leave? This is my home. There were others that were much more sort of poetically written and very reflective. And it, like the leavers, there was a sort of a mashup of reasons. The environment, the small size of our communities, home, but there's something else, like, I am a Vermonter. I wouldn't leave. It's who I am. Heritage came up over and over again. It's coming in from the comments that you all are hearing that I'm an X generation Vermonter. That's really strong for some people. And there's a sense of almost, not necessarily obligation, but maybe an homage to heritage that's embedded in those.
Jill?
I think we want to, at least I do initially, make sort of a class-based explanation. Well, you know, we've already learned that the survey participants were highly educated and over 50% of them left. So it's the middle-class people who leave and it's the blue-collar Vermonters maybe who stay. But I'm really, and a lot of people have asked us, well, did you pin down if people are seventh generation, sixth generation? And I don't think you need to go back really more than one generation. There's a rural sociologist by the name of Jameson who's talked about Scotland and about the fact that blue-collar workers tend to stay more than middle-class workers. But if you look at the middle-class workers in that study, the people whose parents are also from the area tend to stay. And the middle-class people whose parents are not from the area tend to leave. And I think if we do an expansion of the survey, that's a question I have. You know, if your parents came from somewhere else and raised you in Vermont, even if you love Vermont and all the aspects of it, I think it becomes really easy for you to grow up and migrate. It's sort of like, what do you do when you grow up? Well, you find a place you like and you move there like mom and dad did. But if your parents are from here and never have left, and if your grandparents are from here and never have left, it becomes it becomes much harder to do that, to leave.
So lots of possibilities then for follow-ups for you as researchers to dig further into the data that you have, or to have other surveys. A lot of people gave you their names for more stories or more follow-ups. What about how other people might be able to use this data that you have in figuring out, I don't know, social policy, governmental policy? What are you thinking this might be used for, Cheryl Morse?
You've pointed out the main ones already. We've already spoken with the Agency of Commerce Community Development, the Vermont Historical Society. I think there are a lot of groups of people who have social, environmental, agricultural, educational viewpoints who are trying to see what they can learn from this survey so that they can adjust their programming or their goals for what they're doing. So there's certainly a lot of policy opportunities here, but I also think it helps individual people situate their own experience amongst a broader group of Vermonters, and that's always sort of a really interesting process.
Jill Mudgett, what about for you? What are you hoping that people will glean from this?
I would like to see policy discussions become a little bit more nuanced. Yeah, I think that's going to be exciting to watch that happen.
Well, there's a lot here. We have a link at vpr.net. You can dig into some of the results of this survey and what these researchers have found. More stuff, including what people would like to see about Vermont, what they think is lacking, perhaps some of the reasons why they left that have less to do with jobs and more to do with other things, wanting an urban environment, wanting more cultural diversity. There's also some information about migration within the state. When people return, where do they return to in Vermont? You can find a link to all of that at vpr.net. Cheryl Morse is a professor of geography at UVM. Jill Mudgett is a historian. They are two of the researchers responsible for the Vermont Roots Migration Survey. Thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Coming up, a different look at Vermont demographics. We'll find out why the neighborhood you grew up in matters for your future earning capacity. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. A new study is offering a detailed picture of how geographic location affects future income. Researchers at Harvard University's Equality of Opportunity Project went back to a set of data collected years ago in an experiment from the early 90s, when the U.S. government gave vouchers to help poor families move to better neighborhoods, and then compared the outcomes with families who stayed where they were. The results initially showed little benefit. But now researchers at Harvard have additional data that looks at the earnings of the kids in these families as they grew up. It found that their location as children made for big differences when they became adults, and that each year spent in a particular place cumulatively affected the child's adult earnings. Ben Scuderi is one of the researchers with the Equality of Opportunity Project, and he says the new data reveals the problem of concentrated disadvantage.
It's just basically, it's a sociological concept that when you have a lot of people who are living in deprived conditions close to each other, they basically don't have the social capital to leave that bad situation.
The New York Times has published all of this data in an interactive feature, and it's fascinating to drill into the county-by-county data for Vermont. To get a perspective on that, we turned to Vince Baldock, professor of sociology and anthropology at St. Michael's College in Colchester.
There are a lot of great things about this research effort. One of the things that I like most as a sociologist is that we're looking at social structural factors, or we're looking at groups outside the individual. And that's wonderful. That's the very basis of what sociology does. So if we're looking at mobility, for example, rather than just looking at individual effort, we're able to look at the whole community, a town, a neighborhood, a county, as different phases of this research are doing. And it's clearly showing independent effects of geography, about where you live, on the outcomes and how well you do. And that affirms my whole discipline. So I'm obviously very, very happy about that. I've also always been particularly interested in neighborhoods and the impact of being close to other people. And this underscores that this is important.
Let's talk a little bit about the data. So I'm using the New York Times interactive feature, which has generated a lot of buzz among people because you can get down to the county level and see how income mobility works for your area and your neighborhood. So looking here at the New York Times interactive map, it suggests that a child who grows up poor in Chittenden County is not in a great spot in terms of being able to have upward mobility. So it suggests that perhaps instead of living in Burlington, that child's family should move to Franklin County to the north. Still a fairly small population size in Franklin County and not a wealthy county by Vermont standards. But Franklin County is pretty good by national standards for income mobility. It's better than about 65% of counties around the country. Vince Bolduc, you suggested, though, that that doesn't mean that every family in Chittenden County should just up and move to Franklin County and expect a better outcome for their children.
That's right. Yeah, when we deal with big statistics like this, we're always talking about probabilities. We're not talking about individuals. The role of the individual in mobility is still extremely important, very difficult to quantify. These researchers have made a terrific effort at quantifying data in aggregate, but it's really only true in aggregate, and you know, and as a large group of people. And I can see why Franklin County would do a little bit better in this because of some of the things that they, some of the characteristics that they have as a community, such as I'll bet they do have greater income equality and probably less segregation that they, which is one of the measures they use, and good schools, and I'll bet good social capital. Their crime rate would be low. I'll bet the participation in voluntary associations, one of the measures that these researchers use, and religious attendance is are all very good up there. And so by this research, one can understand why a young person growing up there should do well. But again, that's as an aggregate, not as an individual. This may not apply to your child or to my child, but it may to 100,000 people. And my worry, of course, about small numbers is that we take them too individually, too personally, and that may not be warranted.
Yeah, so when you look at something like that, you also have to take into account jobs. Vermont has low unemployment, but certain counties in Vermont have higher unemployment than others. And so, you know, one of the factors for an individual family would certainly be, can we find jobs here? Or is there enough childcare here, which might be an issue where you may have more opportunities for something like childcare in a place with a higher population base? So how does that all sugar out?
Sure. Yeah. Remember, in talking about these rates, as this study does, they're showing, for example, in one of the tables that I have before me, that in the most mobile counties in the United States, San Jose, San Francisco, they find that the highest rate of mobility is about 12% of people who are born into the lower quintile economically reaching the highest quintile. And in the lowest rates of mobility are found in places like Milwaukee, where the rate is about 4%. So that's a statistically significant difference, but it's not huge. It doesn't explain everything. There's so many other variables going on here. It's one of the wonderful and enticing things about studying this is because there are hundreds of variables. And if they've been able to identify the five that they really focus on, that's great success. But I'd be skeptical about applying it to every individual. When we look at the whole map of the United States, we see some huge differences between regions. And the text, of course, is very clear on that also. The Northeast is actually pretty good in terms of encouraging mobility or facilitating mobility, and the West, but the South is just really having problems with that, apparently. When I teach one of my classes in demographics and we look at different states, at the first week of class, I always tell the students, keep an eye on a couple of your favorite states in the South and let's see where they appear repeatedly as we look at different rankings for all sorts of different measures of well-being. And southern states really with great frequency appear on the low end of the best measures and on the high end of the worst measures, like crime rates and various health measures and so forth. And this certainly corresponds with that in terms of mobility. The effect of a lot of people being together who all share similar disadvantages or advantages is cumulative. And so you can really see the effects on mobility. So I applaud this study for recognizing that as well as it does, as well as to take it beyond even that high level of geography to international differences. We certainly see some big international differences in mobility also.
That's Vince Baldock, professor of sociology and anthropology at St. Michael's College in Colchester. We asked him to give us his impressions of data that was just released by the Equality of Opportunity Project at Harvard University, which looks at how childhood neighborhoods affect income mobility. You can see the New York Times interactive data that goes deep into county-by-county income mobility data in Vermont, too. We have a link on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And we're still getting emails and thoughts on our earlier conversation about why people stay in Vermont or why they leave. Sue says, yes, some of us do like shoveling snow. She is responding to my suggestion that nobody really likes shoveling snow. Sue says, I'm a woman in my 40s who spent most of her life in Vermont, but I spent 6 years in Southern California, and while that was fun for a while, the population density was crazy, and I desperately missed shoveling snow. Having returned to Vermont 3 years ago, I am once again happy to be shoveling. All right, Sue. All right, well, that does it for today. Tomorrow, we are joined by Vermont Congressman Peter Welch. We'll talk about climate change and energy efficiency, data security, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Bernie Sanders, and more. You can send your comments and your questions for Congressman Welch to vermontedition@vpr.net, and be sure to tune in tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.